I was a very starry-eyed kid. I always had like big dreams in my eyes. I became the first girl in my town to get into an IIT. If done right, if blockchain-based technology can like truly change the way certain things operate.
Hello, everyone. Today we are at Biddle Crypto, Biddle Space with Ankita Verma. Ankita, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before I go into all your achievements, wanted to just ask you, tell me a little bit about yourself and your life journey so far.
Sure. That's usually the first question that I get. Hello, everyone. I am Ankita Verma. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Persona. I come from India. I was born, I grew up there. I come from a very small town in Bihar called Bhagalpur. I was a very starry-eyed kid. I always had like big dreams in my eyes. I became the first girl in my town to get into an IIT. It was always my dream to get into an IIT. Spent amazing few years there. And then after that, spent a little over 4 years in India, mostly moving from one job to another, trying to figure out what I want to do in my life because I had no idea. Started as a developer, software engineer, and then soon realized that I want to be more on the business side of things. So moved to consulting and then to VC. And while I was working at the VC fund, I got a chance to launch their incubator, Accelerator, which is when I got a chance to meet multiple amazing founders. And I realized that probably that's my true calling, that I want to be on the other side of the table. And around the same time, I was also very inspired by the innovation that was happening in Silicon Valley. I was reading up a lot on Mark Zuckerberg and Google and Tesla. And I thought to myself that if I want to be an entrepreneur, I want to be one in Silicon Valley. So I had no idea how to get to the US at that point of time. And the only most viable way that I could think of was coming here for my MBA. So luckily I applied and I got into Wharton. I came here, spent 2 amazing years at Wharton, and it was kind of like a really life-changing experience because, you know, you come from India, you have like this tech background and you think that, you know, tech and engineering is everything and they are the smartest people. But then here you get exposed to all sorts of people from different walks of life. So people from social sciences and from military and people from economics. So just like really broadens your horizon quite a lot. And then after that, because I had never worked in the US, I decided to spend some time working here just to understand how businesses operate here, how it is like to build in the US market. So I joined Amazon. I got an amazing role as a product manager. I grew very quickly, became head of product at AWS AI, and got a chance to build and launch multiple products. I learned how to build products, how to sell products, how to work with engineers. I learned all of it. So it was kind of a training ground for me for what I do today. And then after that, I got my green card. And then I was like, Ankita, you don't have any more excuses left now. So the day I got my green card, I quit my job. And then that's how, at that point of time, started building Persona.
That's an amazing story, especially on the part of when you got your green card, you had it all planned out that just, you know, this is it. Because I remember when it was my time a while back, and I didn't think much of it. And so now I think I didn't plan as such. Fantastic journey that you have, very short amount of time that is very suitable for the type of person that you are, that I know when I met you in the conference, the star-eyed person. And so very perfectly matches what I've imagined.
Thank you, sir.
So you mentioned your inspiration, and I know there are a lot of, if you indulge me, I might go in a little bit in that tangent, is the Zuckerberg and the Teslas, and you know, when you come to Silicon Valley, those are the first things you look at, and those are not just in this decade. It started way back when, right, with the semiconductor industry. And I got exposed to it a little later. that feeling that you had, I'm kind of I have a mutual kind of respect for that. That's somebody who comes to this Mecca for I, you know, for software, for IT, has any other thing that inspired you besides that, besides those iconic figures? Say, I would say specifically led you to a Web3 space.
Yeah, so I actually started investing in Bitcoin in 2015 when I came to the US, when I came to Wharton. And, you know, I was a small time investor. I have been investing in the space for quite some time since then. But I was watching the space mostly from the side. For several years as a Bitcoin investor, and then, you know, bought a couple of NFTs and then Ethereum and a couple of altcoins. So I was watching this space from the side and investments that I was doing, but at the same time, I was really very closely following the technology. So the evolution of blockchain and then NFTs and then ZK. So I was following the technology quite a bit. So very honestly, what led me to Web3 was the fact that it's such a greenfield space. It's such an open space where there's this potential to build something that can truly change the game for how things operate in this world, right? And I always compare it. It's kind of cliched, but I compare it to the early 2000s of the dot-com era, right? Where there were so many, like the Yahoos and the Googles of the world were being formed. And I compare it to that time because I truly believe that if done right, a blockchain-based technology can, like I said, truly change the way certain things operate, be it fintech, be it ads, be it attribution. So the biggest draw was, of course, like the ability to do something in such a native manner in a greenfield space.
Yeah, Kita, that is a very interesting point. In fact, that's partly why I got into the space, because it's so greenfield, and you know that that feeling of starting fresh or starting, it's so true. Like, and you know, I was thinking initially to go Web2 with podcasting and on, but then I thought, why not start from scratch? You know, if I want to do this, and so I do kind of resonate with what you said there. That it's an open field, and the technology is there. It's real. It's not going anywhere.
Totally, yeah.
Your startup persona, it's a very interesting piece of technology, interesting solution to a problem that us in the industry know exists. And so I would love to hear from you. How are you approaching this?
The way when in 2022, I was, you know, very, very deep trying to figure out what's the right business and the solution to build. I was talking to a lot of builders, a lot of investors, a lot of people in this Web3 space in general. And the one thing that stood out to me was how the user experience, the user acquisition funnel is so broken. So if you look at Web3 today, marketing, user acquisition, all of it happens in a very native form, in the form of, like, you know, like Discord messages and Twitter messages and conferences. So it's all, like I said, you know, like the early 2000s of the internet. So what used to happen then in the regular Web2 world, the same things are happening in the Web3 world right now. So I started thinking about, like, how do we bring that that data-driven approach to make marketing, growth, user acquisition very, very seamless and easy for Web3. And in parallel, I was also very, very fascinated by the on-chain data. So if you have ever used transacted crypto, you know that there is this wallet, and whatever transactions you make using those wallet, whether it is purchasing an NFT or a token or a coin, all of these transactions, they go on this public ledger, which is the blockchain, right? And all of this data is public. And if you think about it, it is not like a browsing data. It is not like an intent data. It is not a third party data. It's an actual immutable data about you making a real purchase. So I was very fascinated about how this data could be used for user acquisition, growth, targeted campaigns. And that's what led to Persona. So coming to persona, a very simple way to understand it is Google AdSense, but it is built natively for Web3. I'll explain how it works. There are two sides. It's an ad network. So there are two sides to the network. First side is the advertising side. So anybody in Web3 looking to get in front of real Web3 audience. So that's side number one. Side number two is the publishing side. So this is where the ads go. This is where the ads are displayed. So what we do at Persona is we partner with Web3 applications. So this could be different Web3 DEXs. These could be Web3 gaming platform. These could be Web3 data aggregators. And what we do is we show our ads on these Web3 native platforms. The goal is twofold. One is that only real Web3 users, they see this ad. And the second is because these platforms, they allow users to connect their wallet. We are able to target users on the basis of what's in their wallet. So I'll break it down a little bit. So like I was talking about the on-chain data, right? So it's all associated to your wallet. What we did at Persona was we indexed these different wallets, about 200 million at this point of time. And we know all of their transaction history. We know what kind of NFTs they purchased, whether it was music NFT or sports NFT or gaming NFT. We know what kind of tokens they transact in. We know how much they hold. So based on all of this, we created Persona, hence the name Persona. And now on these platform, our partner platform, we are able to show them like really targeted ads based on their wallet persona. So that does two things. One, that it is so relevant, the ads, that we get much higher performance on these ads. And second is that we're able to exclude any wallets that we don't want to show these ads to. So it's a win-win for everybody. We are not using cookies or any kind of PII data. It's all public data, which is associated to your wallet. So we don't know if you're a male, female, or you have a dog or a cat. But what we do have is like these actual purchase data from the chain. So this is essentially what we are doing at Persona. We launched in August of 2023. And then, you know, since then, we have grown at a crazy pace. Today, we work with some of the biggest Web3 names, including MetaMask, Immutable, Engine, Hashflow. We have run campaigns for all of these. And then on the publishing side, our ads go on some of the biggest dApps in Web3 today. So we are very excited about what it holds for us, the future holds for us.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see that this problem has persisted in the space where, you know, you really don't know what to do with all that data that's generated on chain, right? How do you make sense of that data? Just give insights with, and at the same time balance out the privacy concerns one might have. And there's a very delicate balance, which seems like you've kind of cracked that code in some way, and it's super, super interesting. On that topic, I wanted to ask you, like, when you mentioned Google AdSense for Web3, right? Now, Web3 enables, as we all know, that it enables some other, these new primitives enable some other new features that you cannot do on Web2, right? And I would love to hear from you, Ankita, what those kind of capabilities are or will be in the future?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So if you think about Web3, some of the core tenets of Web3 are privacy and transparency, right? Building a Web3 native ad network meant that we were able, because we were building for the blockchain, we were able to bring in some of these tenets by default. For example, like I said, right, you know, coming to privacy, we are able to target on the basis of on-chain data. Today, no Web2 company can do that. No Web2 company has that kind of data about like who their users are and what are they purchasing. And if they're, you know, purchasing from a competitor, or if they're like, what are the other lookalike products they're purchasing and all of that. So Web3, first of all, I think blockchain enables that. Second is, if you look at the ad funnel, right, in Web2, it's broken. You don't know if it's a bot that's engaging with your ad. You don't know what happens after they click on an ad. The attribution is such a tricky problem in Web2. But with Web3, given all of these transactions happen on the chain, which is an immutable record of these transactions, it's it becomes multiple times easier to actually get the entire life cycle of an ad, right? From a person seeing the ad to a person clicking on the ad, and then after that, you know, completing the purchase or minting or whatever. All of that is on chain. So it becomes very straightforward problem to actually solve that attribution issue that persists in Web 2. That is point number two. There are other ad types that Web 2 does not, will not be able to support, which Web 3 does, which brings me to actually the third tenet, which is ownership. So Web 3 is a lot about ownership. If you are giving your time, if you are giving your attention, you should be rewarded in some way. You should own a piece of the pie, which is what we can do with persona and Web 3 ads in general, which is if the user is engaging with the ad, they get rewarded for their time and engagement. So one of an examples of this, very clear examples of this, is something like a gasless ad. For example, the user makes a transaction on the chain. They have to pay a transaction fee, which is called the gas fee. Now, coming up with new ad types which can enable these kind of rewards where, you know, the gas fee gets taken care of by the advertiser. This is something which is very unique and which can happen in a Web3-like system, and it's not something which can very easily happen in Web2. So I think coming back, I always think about the tenets that Web3 stands for and how can we make our product 10x more effective than a Web2 equivalent by just like sticking to those tenets.
You know, you mentioned Web3. Interesting use case that you just mentioned about gasless transactions. Gasless, you know, the ads taking care of that. I mean, that is something that is truly unique to Web3, which you, if you try to mimic that in Web2, it's just you're running into centralized systems and that sort of a thing. I mean, that in itself, could you like expand on it a little? My brain is getting fired in all different directions and all sort of possibilities that you can even layer this in the real world sort of scenarios, right? And I don't know, like going my car pass, like fast track pass or something, like gets paid off or something.
Your DoorDash order or like your Netflix subscription or like, yeah, there are so many use cases. And,
yeah, endless possibilities
endless
like that.
Possibilities. So. True, yeah. But I guess the idea is ownership. Rewarding users for their time and attention, which does not happen in Web2 today. You know, Facebook and Google, they have all of your, sorry, Meta and Google, they have all of your data. They build $1 billion ad empire on top of your data and you end up giving your attention. So it's a very simple idea. But like you said, the application gasless is just like one simple use case of such an application. There could be several other use cases like we were talking about, right? You know, your Dash Pass or like your Uber order or like Netflix subscription. There's just so much out there that can be done.
Is Brave considered a co-partner or like are they something that you would consider them like in the system? Do you see them integrating with? Because they, I remember they had some sort of you know, inbuilt browser kind of feature, a reward system, but I wasn't sure if it was pertaining to like ads, specific to ads, the way you are trying to do. Because I think you're trying to do more it dynamically. You know, when say somebody's doing paying for coffee or something, some other transaction in the real world. I mean, that's a totally another world out there, the transactional world. And then I think they were trying to do that in the in browser.
Yeah. So that's the difference. Brave also does the BAT rewards, BAT tokens as rewards. But it is for the ads that come on the browser. So you opt in to watch certain number of ads on the browser and then you get rewarded according to how many ads you engage with. But ours is a different model in the sense that, you know, it's more like the other side where the ads can be the way it can appear in front of you. That's like very like limitless, right? There can be different ways in which it could appear. It could appear on a website, it could appear in your wallet, it could appear in some other way. So essentially the scope of the ads, the modalities of ads, it's actually much broader in our case.
bigger because you're not chain agnostic. Like, yeah, I mean, you're chain agnostic.
We're chain
basically.
agnostic, and at the same time, we are not limited to one platform to show ads. For example, Brave ads, they go on Brave browser. We can partner with a lot of publishers and go on different places.
Great segue into my next question that I've been thinking about after looking at Persona is just trying to map it out with, you know, for folks who are new to the space. Like traditionally, you know, in Web 2 space, we have CPC, you know, all of that cost for acquisition, all the, you know, AdSense folks know what I'm talking about. How does that map into Web 3 and into Persona specifically?
Yeah, so the way it maps is that it's actually, so right now what we do is a CPM model, which is cost per 1,000 impressions, and ad folks will be very familiar with this term. But again, coming back to attribution, because the attribution funnel in Web3 is so transparent because all of it happens on chain. We are also very excited about CPA or cost per action model, where you actually pay whenever there is an action that is taken. So if you want a swap to happen as a result of an ad, you pay only when the user performs that actual swap, right? So, and it, like I said, it becomes easier for Web3 because the swap happens on the chain and we get immutable data about the user actually going and performing that swap. So we are actually, Web3 enables like a host of options, which is like starting right from CPM to like CPC, which is cost per click. And then, like I said, CPA, which is cost per action. And we want to be able to offer the optionality to the advertiser to choose which one works for them based on their use case.
Got it. So if I'm an advertiser and so all these different, I would say funnels in the that I want to target, and I can go in Persona platform and select that, and I will be presented with all different sort of options that I can play with in and where I want to target my users, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you have you can choose what type of payment model you want: CPM, CPC, CPA. You can also choose different kind of targeting. We can target on the basis of some Web2 criteria, which is like geo, devices, and also Web3 criteria, which is what's in your wallet.
So how does that, what is the range of that, like typically cost for your customer looks like for people doing the transitioning from Web2 and also who are in the space?
Yeah, so it's actually a range, right? Like anything, it depends on what kind of users you are looking to target. So I'll give you some baseline numbers for our CPM-based ads, which is cost per 1,000 impressions-based ads. They vary a lot on the basis of number one, geography, like who are you targeting? Where are they? And number two, like what kind of users they are? Are they like, you know, degens, or are they like transacting users, or are they gamers? So there is a cost associated with them. So for example, like I said, coming back to like geo, if you target users from say North America, United States, Canada, specifically, those are expensive, more expensive than say like if you're targeting user from say like a Thailand or Vietnam. And it's just a function of like the lifetime value of the user that you're looking to target and how much they can potentially spend on your platform. Similarly, so that's the geo-based way of looking at it. Similarly, if you're looking to, for example, looking for users who actually transact, make big transactions on chain. If you're a MetaMask, you're looking for users who can come swap on your platform. Those users are again like more expensive than say like somebody who can come and download your game. So those are like two different types of actions, and there are different values associated with these two actions. So coming back to actual number, it depends a lot, but it can go like the CPM can go anywhere between, I would say, like a dollar to, in some cases, like $10, $12 as well. And the model that we have built is like very adaptive. So it learns quite a bit as to like which user is more high value than say like another type of user. But that's the range. I know it's a very broad range, but that's how it rolls.
and I think I mentioned it in the start, and you very eloquently described how you guys do it, but maybe I'll touch a little bit on it again. The duality of, in this space, having some sort of analytics, but at the same time keeping that anonymization of the data points that we have for users, right? What are some of the challenges that you, like, are there challenges, first of all? And if they are, how do you sort of approach them in terms of, ZK seems very compelling, and I've heard you mention it. So I would love to know a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a fine balance that we have to strike. So there is one side of the spectrum where you have no data on the user except for their on-chain data, which is associated to a wallet, right? That is one side of the spectrum. And the other side of the other end of the spectrum is that you have all of that data about them, including their wallet data, right? Of course, the more data you have, the better ads you're able to show. So we try to strike a balance between these two ends, where we have on-chain data as well as some off-chain data, which is their geo and their device type and a couple of other data points. What we steer clear of is cookies. We don't use cookies, so we don't get any kind of PII about the users, and we don't store any of such data. And again, like, it becomes like a little bit of challenge to balance that, because for some Web3 users, even that's a lot. And that's the data that we shouldn't be looking at. And then, but most of them, they understand that, the better data you have, the better ads you're able to show, which is why we constantly are working towards rewarding the users more and more for sharing any data which is not public. So then they become a part of the ecosystem, and they get rewarded for them giving us permission to use the data, which is the future which we are moving towards. And that's when it'll all balance out and it'll become fair. So that's point number one. The point about ZK is, again, like, so ZK is the future where this can happen through ZK technology, where users choose to share what they want to share. Even the public on-chain data that might not remain public forever, and they can choose to share what part of on-chain data they want to share for any kind of targeting, right? So that's like an extreme form of public owning their own data. So in the future, where ZK becomes mainstream, this rewarded ad ecosystem comes to like a full fruition, where not just the off-chain data, but also the on-chain data becomes permissioned, and the user gets paid for whatever they want to share. So that's essentially a future that we are looking forward to. And until then, like I said, we'll be treading this fine line between the two extremes that I spoke about.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Ankita, that you want to be there when it as it happens, right? And these primitives are coming, and they are useful. They still have some trade-offs, performance, whatnot, but these primitives are here, and it's almost like encryption in the 70s, right? You cannot, yeah. The genie's out of the bottle. It's great.
I think for developers, there are two value propositions. One is, of course, they can like run their ads and acquire users. The other is that they can monetize their ad, platform, right, by showing our ads.
Yes. Yeah. That's a community connect. I think that's a good point, that when you mentioned about the community, right, coming back, like some kind of DAO that connects to an ad network. I mean, this is just blue sky thinking, right? There are some interesting ideas definitely there, which maybe I'll have to think more about. Since this podcast is highly focused towards builders, right? People who build code, and the whole team is around that. Designers, be it even campaign managers, anybody. What is your viewpoint on folks who are, say, developers who have application development and they want to use your platform persona? Like, how could they benefit in new and interesting ways?
Yeah, so they have two different ways of working with us. The first way is user acquisition and growth, which is very straightforward. They come to Persona, they want to acquire new users, they create a campaign. It's a self-serve platform, takes like 5 minutes to set up a campaign. They set up their targeting criteria, who are they trying to reach out to, which geos, what kind of users, and then they upload their creatives. And then, within 5 minutes, they click submit and we approve it, and their ads will start displaying on some of the biggest Web3 websites, and they can track their entire user acquisition funnel using our dashboard, who all are clicking, how many are converting, how many are actually ending up to buy their product or like sign up or like whatever their conversion goal is. So that's first way of working with us. The second way of working with us is monetizing their dApps. So if they already have applications that has users, they can actually work with us to integrate with our SDK and show ads, show persona ads on their platform. So whenever there are advertisers who want to run ads on our platform, we'll be directing their those ads to their platform, and they will earn for every view or every impression on the ad. So some of our publishers, they earn upwards of 10K, 15K, 20K, depending on their traffic, monthly just by showing ads on their platform. So these are the two different ways of working with us.
Yeah, that is fantastic. I think, especially for developers, finding that new ways for revenue generation, I
Yeah.
seems a very plausible way to go, actually. And developers are going to be developing anyways for this ecosystem. They'll be around for a while for to giving them those tools as well and making their life easier and helping them would be a would be fantastic. And I and this is I'm just as I kind of overindulge in the futuristic sort of ideas. I was wondering perhaps if there would be some data models in the future which kind of give sort of like flow of like where the data is going cross chain and that sort of a thing would also be valuable even for developers building in multi-chain ecosystem. So
Yeah,
interesting stuff.
definitely. Blockchain makes all of that possible.
Yes, definitely. Okay, this is kind of a tradition that I'm kind of starting. Like, what? Before I go to the my final question, I wanted to ask you: do you have any piece of advice for people who are, I would consider, not just in Southeast Asia but all over the world, who are global crypto entrepreneurs? Anything you would like to say to them? And also, my next guest, who's unknown at the moment, what would you say to them? Passing the baton, sort of a thing.
I think one thing which I feel very strongly about in Web3 is that a lot of builders, they build for fad and they build for the really short-term returns and rewards, and they spend less time thinking about what is the problem statement they are solving for, why are they doing it, who are the potential actual users, what are their pain points. So the basics, right? So I would just urge everybody who is looking to build in Web3 to build for the actual problem and not a fad, and really think deeply about the use cases, your users, and build for the long term. Because that is what is missing in Web3 and blockchain ecosystem, quite a bit in today's time. So that would be my advice.
That is fantastic advice, and you don't hear that often in the space, actually.
Yeah, which is why I feel very strongly about this, and this is the advice that I give to everybody who wants to become a Web3 entrepreneur.
It is a definitely a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah.
And where can builders find you and your team?
Yes, so we are our website, www.persona3.io. That's our website. That'll give you a very high level overview of what we do for publishers, what we do for advertisers. It also has a link to sign up for our demo. So please go sign up for our demo. Somebody from the team will reach out. We'll be very happy to walk you through the product and the use cases.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Ankita. I personally learned a lot about the analytics side of things in blockchain, which personally I was, to be honest, not that knowledgeable. And so this was a pleasure. I would love to have you on the show sometime in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really had a lot of fun chatting with you.
Thank you.